Quick introduction. So I used to be a developer. I'm now a lawyer. If you want to contact me, that's my email address at the bottom. If you want to say bad things about me on Twitter, now's your chance. So first, a disclaimer. I am a lawyer. That's not the disclaimer. The disclaimer is that I'm not your lawyer. So unless you're watching this, and I am your lawyer in which case, I'm still your lawyer, but probably I'm not your lawyer. We're here to talk about cloud computing. This is not an anti-cloud computing talk, but the idea is to tell you what the problems are. And cloud computing is dangerous. Reminds me of a Saturday Night Live skit where they had the two flight attendants, and one says, in case of a crash landing, put your head between your legs and kiss your ass goodbye. That's what we're talking about. Someone once said, you can delegate authority, but you can never delegate responsibility. He was a general manager at Ford Motor Company, the Edsel division. So it's worth thinking about. And that's what we're talking about today. So three questions I want to answer as we go through. The first is, what are the risks? What are the real things that put you at risk from a legal perspective? Second, are you protected? Maybe you're already protected from some of these things. And third, what can you do if you're not? And where do we go from there? So, what is cloud computing? I could try to give you a definition, but I'd be an idiot because it's very hard to define, and experts don't agree, right? People who are in the business don't agree on what cloud computing requires. But there are some promises of cloud computing. First is secure data that's replicated, right? It doesn't just exist in one place. Somehow, it's replicated elsewhere. They promise to free us from backups, right? You don't have to manage backups. You don't have to perform them. Somebody else takes care of that process. Multi-tenancy. The idea is that there are many consumers all in the same space, and you're all working in more or less the same area. Your data, well, that's probably too many women for this room, but you're all working in the same space, and your data is in some ways commingled. Third-party administration. There's somebody. The idea is there's somebody else taking care of your problems. You're outsourcing this to another company whose core competency is doing this. Many cloud offerings offer automatic scaling as you need it. Some require you to push it as you realize you need more. So are all of these things required for cloud? Well, probably not. But it turns out it doesn't really matter. Because the things that are cloud, and things that just look like cloud, all have the same problems. So there are two things that create problems in cloud computing. The first is multi-tenancy, having multiple users sharing their data in the same place. And the second is third-party possession. Your data is someplace else, and someone else takes care of it for you. And they have access to it. This guy is not the problem. It's not regular hackers, even if they have their hats on backwards, that are the problem. The hacking is a problem. I mean, it's the same problem it was before. And maybe it's a bigger problem than it used to be because people joke about, security by obscurity being bad. But if your company is relatively obscure, maybe people don't want your data. But if you take all of your stuff and put it with somebody else's data that they do want, when they break in, they may, pick up yours as well. But that's not the problem I want to talk about. It's this guy. It's lawyers, things that are done completely legally. And your data may leak out. Will Rogers once said, you can't say civilization don't advance. In every war, they kill you in a new way. These are some of the same ways that they kill you, and some of them are new. But we're applying it to a new architecture. So why is cloud risky? Groucho Marx said that man does not control his own fate, that women in his life do that for him. And he, I think, hit on it. It's an issue of control. Somebody else controls your data, your software. And it isn't just control. It's also transparency. You don't know how they're doing these things. Right? You don't know what they're doing. You don't know who has access to it. Now, some people tell you that you can trade transparency for control. And that's as good, you know, that's fine for some things, but not for the problems that we're talking about. If it is good, right? The less control you have, the more transparency you need. But that's not going to solve all of your problems. So what's the worst that can happen? Well, let's think of a few examples. Google Docs. Some people last year got this email. Dear Google Docs user, we've identified and fixed the bug which may have caused you to share some of your documents without your knowledge. That was written by a lawyer. Google at the time had about 4.4 million users, and they said it only affected 0.05%. Well, that's about 2,200 users. If you work in a small company, or if you work in a large company with a small department, you know, that may be 30 times the number of people that you work with. It could be all of your documents. You may remember the T-Mobile Sidekick. This was run by a company called Danger. Microsoft bought this company called Danger, which is funny because Microsoft you usually think of as selling Danger. But in this case, they bought it. And when there was a crash, an estimated 1 million customers lost their data. And they lost it for 2 weeks while they ran around. T-Mobile ran around saying, "Well, we don't know if we have the backups." You may wonder how they knew they were being backed up if they couldn't figure out where the backups were. That seems sort of a basic requirement of an audit. But when they finally figured out how to restore it, it was 2 weeks old. You may not think of Google Voice as cloud, but when voicemail transcripts appeared in Google search results, you know, how did my documents and information get out there? Well, Google, it turns out, knew about the problem, but didn't tell anybody as they tried to fix it. And this is one of the problems of transparency. Lao Tzu said, "He who knows does not speak." This may have been Google they were talking about, or maybe Toyota. We stand behind our cars, far behind. So why did it take so long for them to notice? Well, this is something we'll get to in a little while. Now, there was Intuit, an Intuit problem in February 2009. I'll just run quickly through. There was a QuickBooks Online failure. Now, if you're a small company and you keep all of your financial data out there, this is a big deal, especially if it lasts for 6 hours in the middle of the day. And there was just no explanation. There was no transparency. Nobody knew why it happened. And then in June, there was a complete data center failure. Thought they had more than one data center, but there was a total failure. Financial data was unavailable for over a day, some for 36 hours. And that was just the first time. It followed 4 weeks of blackouts. And at some point, Intuit just said, you know, if you want updates, follow us on Twitter. And quickly, there was another failure this month. Some people was fixed in 2 hours, other lasted half a day. There were experts who said it looked like a DOS attack, but you know, Intuit wouldn't say what it was. No transparency at all. Now, the Sidekick from T-Mobile and Google Voice and Intuit's problems, Google Apps, are these all cloud? Well, first, how do you know? Right? They tell you this stuff is replicated. They tell you it's out there. But how do you know if they're fulfilling these promises? Right? With no transparency and no control, you have no idea what they're doing. So data breaches are a serious problem. I don't know what happened special in 2008, but they're growing and they're not shrinking. When you look at serious data breaches, 64% originate outside the organization. It's not some idiot who leaves his laptop in his car and it gets broken into or drops a mobile device. I mean, that happens. But by far, most of them come from outside the organization. And when there's a third party involved in a data breach, twice as many records are typically stolen. Now, many attacks originate from outside our walls. I'm not naming any names of countries, just saying they happen elsewhere. So are we all moving to the cloud, screaming whether we like it or not? Well, in a survey by Symantec of senior vice presidents, and directors of 2010 priorities, cloud computing ranked 13th after energy savings. So what the hell are we doing here talking? Well, in a survey by Gartner of chief information officers of 2010 priorities, cloud computing ranked 2nd after virtualization. So what does all this mean for cloud computing? Well, the future is uncertain. We don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know what the offerings will be. We don't know what kind of things will be built into them. And the market is fractured. Moving from one service is difficult. Moving from one service to another is difficult. They don't all offer the same things. But for certain things, there really is no turning back. You know, software development companies, when they used to make software and ship it to customers, that was fine. They just made the software, and they handled some telephone calls. But now that you make software and you host it, software development companies probably aren't that good at hosting. They have to do two things, and they have to do them both really well. Probably better for them to shift that to another company whose one core competency is doing the hosting. But still, there's a problem. Right now, as it is today, cloud computing is a lot like bungee jumping, where you don't know the height of the bridge, or the length of the rope, or if the rope is really made of rope, or if it's connected to anything but your ankles. And you can test it exactly once after you jump. I got a cup of coffee the other day and had a little warning on it, and I took this picture with my phone, that's why it's terrible. But you can't see what it says until you turn it sideways and look at it. Careful, the beverage you're about to enjoy may be very hot. I think that's what we're talking about. So there are four topics I want to cover. The first is inherent dangers. These are the kinds of things that you've been warned about, you might be able to figure out ahead of time. But even though you've been warned about them, they may still be a surprise. Second is service agreements, what it's like to contract with a cloud service provider. The third are collateral dangers. These are the things that come from the side that you may not see coming. Maybe you've never heard of them, but they cause huge problems. And then, if we can think of any, solutions. So inherent dangers. As I said, these are the things you've probably been warned about, but you really didn't think of how they might affect you. Laws, federal data protection laws. There are a few, and they're extensive. HIPAA, you've probably heard of. HIPAA has a ton of requirements, and its scope is very broad. It doesn't just handle what to do about data. But one of the things it has as a requirement is what's called business associate agreements. These are agreements that you have to, when you have data and you hand it to a third party, you need them to sign. The law requires that they sign it, and what it does is it obligates them to certain things in the law. Now, the law may have obligated them already, but now it obligates them to you. If you, good luck trying to get, you know, Amazon to sign a business associate agreement to handle health data, or Rackspace, they're just not going to do it. You'd think these things would come up, and maybe we'll get some cloud service providers who are willing to do this sort of thing. But if you have health data, it's a huge problem. HIPAA includes a requirement either that you encrypt data, or if you don't encrypt it and it gets out, there's really onerous data breach report. It's expensive. HIPAA requires you to protect against reasonably anticipated threats or hazards. Now, if you are a sysadmin, those hazards may be different than if you're a lawyer, than if you're things that you can reasonably anticipate, than if you're pure InfoSec. So I don't know how meaningful this is. If you're doing government work, you have to worry about FIPS 140-2 and encryption requirements. And more federal laws are coming. Even with the recent change in the Congress, we don't know whether these people are privacy advocates or not, for instance. There's a bill called the Data Accountability and Trust Act, or DATA, if you like reflexive acronyms. It was created by Representative Bobby Rush. He has the distinction of being the only federal official ever to have beaten Obama in an election. He holds a seat in Illinois, and he is still in the Congress. He survived his election. His bill, DATA, passed the House in December of last year on the 8th, but like many things, it never really got anywhere in the Senate. What it does require, assuming it never gets anywhere, is protections similar to the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which is a banking protection statute. So it gives you protections similar to what's in banking law. Among them, it requires consumer and FTC notification after a data breach. So you have to tell the Federal Trade Commission. You have to do it unless there's no risk of harm. Now, I don't know what no risk of harm means if you lose personal data. Maybe if your server falls off a cruise ship and ends up in the water, maybe there's no risk of harm. But other than that, you have to wonder. The act preempts existing state law, which means that the existing state law that we have now, and there's a lot of them, would, for the most part, be overruled. And we'll get to what the state laws are in a minute. There's also the Personal Data Privacy and Security Act, which it turns out doesn't spell anything, introduced by Senator Leahy. That's him. When he introduced it, he said this bill provides Americans with notice when they have been victims of a data breach, and also deals with the underlying problem of lax security to help prevent data breaches from occurring. Sounds good. Also didn't go anywhere. The problem with that bill was that he introduced it 3 times and he still hasn't gotten it passed. But it isn't just the feds. What you really have to worry about is state law. 45 states and DC have different data protection laws. And they don't just apply inside the state. Often they apply to data that's held about people who live in the state. So if you're a company in Colorado and you hold data, for instance, a person from Massachusetts, this law will apply to you. So some are less strict than others. For instance, in Utah, a person who owns or licensed computerized data that includes personal information concerning a Utah resident, when the person becomes aware of the breach of a security system, that person that they're talking about is the person who has the data, not the person whose data it is, they conduct a good faith, reasonable, and prompt investigation to determine the likelihood that personal information has or will be misused. So first they find out about the breach, they investigate it. Then they figure out what the data is, haven't told anybody yet. Then they have to think about whether there's a chance it will be misused. Then they can think about telling you. Now, some are much more strict. That little state there is Massachusetts. Massachusetts law is very strict. There's an article, I think today or yesterday, about small businesses who have never had to worry about this thing, who really have been playing fast and loose with personal data, having a lot of trouble complying with it. And it requires that every person encrypt all transmitted records and files containing personal information that travels across public networks. All data containing personal information wirelessly. They have to encrypt personal information stored on laptops or other portable devices. These are all things that you think they would do already, but they don't. And this is key, there must be reasonably up-to-date firewall protection and operating system security patches. Think about that for just a second. It's law to have up-to-date firewall protection and OS patches. In general, state laws do the following. They require some level of security. They require notification on breach for certain things. And for certain kinds of data, usually health data or that sort of thing, if there's a breach, they have added requirements. And there are 46 versions of this. There are also international data protection laws. If you work for a multinational company, something based in Europe, for instance, this will be a big problem for you. The UK Data Protection Act says that data can't be transferred unless the country ensures an adequate level of protection. Now, there's another way that you can transfer data from the EU, and I had this problem. If the employee, for instance, who's, you know, the company transferring employee data, email, gives consent. So I represented a woman who was an employee, and there was an investigation in the US. She was based in the US. The company was based in the UK, and they wanted to send her email, which the government had requested, into the US, right, just out. She had probably written the stuff in the US, but it was in Europe at that time. So they had to get it back into the US. And it required consent. And not just any consent, it requires free, informed, revocable consent. So an initial consent that you realize what they're doing is, oh, wait a second, I don't want you to do that. You can revoke your consent and they can't send it. Which means that if the answer is you're fired, that's not enough, right? It has to really be free consent. Finally, there's an EU data protection directive that came out just a few days ago that added 2 things that we should all care about. One of them is the right to be forgotten. Now think about this. You have your data in the cloud, here and there and everywhere, and you ask to be forgotten. You want all your data deleted. How is a company going to make sure that it all goes away? On the other side, it's a directive that suggests ways to streamline international data transfer, which is what we were just talking about. So it may get easier. Finally, there are corporate policies that may prevent you from transferring HR data or health information if you have it on your employees, marital status, disability, or both, and social security information. So even if you want to do it, your company privacy policy may not permit it. There's the PCI standard. Generally, cloud providers aren't implementing PCI. Now, this is also something that should come soon. Amazon says they'll do it pretty soon. And if anyone can do it, Amazon can do it. But they haven't yet. You can imagine what audits would look like at these places, right? You come in and say, hey, you mind if we look around? They say, yeah, yeah, no problem. And they call the cops. These places are not keen on being audited. With PCI, either you meet the standard or you face very steep fines. Everybody just tries to meet the standard. There are attorney-client privilege problems. We'll get to some of this a little bit later on. The privilege isn't perfect, and it doesn't just apply no matter what happens. In particular, if you move data around, you need to take reasonable precautions to make sure that nobody else can get to that data. So, depending on who your cloud provider is, I don't know if those precautions are reasonable because it just hasn't been tested. There's a reason subpoena is written in big, bold letters. If you've ever received a subpoena, you know how terrible it is. It's very heavy. I'll just give you a little background. A subpoena is typically something that happens in a lawsuit, although the government can subpoena things. And two parties are fighting, and in the beginning of a lawsuit, there's something called discovery, when both parties start asking each other for information. And generally, you have to give it. Now, when one side sends a subpoena to the other, the first thing the other side says is, no, that's too much, or that's too expensive, or you don't have a right to that, or it's protected. But there's a lot of data that gets moved around in a subpoena. So the rule is Civil Procedure Rule 34. This is what it looks like. You probably don't want to know exactly what it says. But this is key. You have to produce the following in the responding party's possession, custody, or control. Electronically stored information in any medium from which information can be obtained. And sometimes after translation by the responding party into a usable form. So if it's someplace, you may need to translate it and give it up, even if it's just a shadow copy. This is what a subpoena looks like. We'll just scroll into it. This one happens to say, if you can read that, you're commanded to produce and permit inspection and copying of the following documents or objects at the place, date, and time specified below. All correspondence and or documents memorializing communication between you and any officer, manager, partner, member, or employee of Sucker LLC regarding the idea that we had and you stole. Documents is extensive. This is a definition in a subpoena, taken from a real subpoena, of what definition of documents is. It means everything. And if you look all the way at the bottom, in your possession, custody, or control, keep that phrase in mind. When there's a lawsuit, a company needs to institute what's called a litigation hold. That means that you need to make sure that things that are commonly deleted, you know, maybe your email gets archived and deleted every 30 days, is not deleted. Think about whether you can do that and freeze data where it is in the cloud, where you don't control it, and you can't even tell if it's happening, right? You may say, hey, freeze that data. And they say, oh, yeah, yeah, no problem, we'll freeze it. And then they go back to what they were doing. So can you ensure the files won't be deleted? Because you can, like I said, you can transfer authority, but responsibility is still yours. And a failure to protect data after a litigation hold can lose you a case. You can just have a default judgment entered against you. Because they assume that the stuff that you let be deleted was important. How about the reverse? You delete files along the way. Have they really been deleted when they're in the cloud? Remember, they're replicated everywhere. Have they all been deleted when you ask them to be deleted? Are they on a backup tape someplace that you don't directly control? Remember, even the cloud providers sometimes don't know where their backups are, right? The point is that data retention policies may leave sensitive data just sort of lingering around. And if that's true, you may have to produce it. And it's expensive to produce. It takes a lot of time. Mostly, people like me have to go through it and make sure it's the kind of thing that you can produce. This guy is bad enough. But what happens if the person who's looking for your data is this guy? So let's go back for a second. There are various laws that prohibit bribes, right? You can't pay bribes in the U.S. for certain things, and you can't pay them overseas. For instance, there's a law called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act that prevents you from paying bribes to foreign officials in order to obtain or retain business. So if you go to Mexico and you want your plant to be inspected, you can't pay a bribe. that is not only an offense that will get you fined, it can get you put in jail. If an employee is paying bribes, that information may be someplace in your system. There will be emails, I promise you, I've held them in my hand before. There will be all kinds of communication, documents, canceled checks. And you don't want to turn that stuff over if you can avoid it. And eventually there are two options if this stuff is around. The first option is that somebody will go to jail, 5 years penalty for violating that kind of law. And the second option is you'll just pay a ton of cash in settlement. I mean, it is a killer. All because you put your data in the cloud and didn't have a way to protect it, and it was just sitting around when the government came looking. And it's an issue of control and transparency. I want to beat that into your head politely, because that's the sort of thing we have to fix in order to make cloud computing a reality for the rest of us. Third-party possession and multi-tenancy. Those two things together are what cause these problems. So the second issue is cloud service provider agreements. We'll just look at two. Napoleon once said that the best way to keep one's word is not to give it. That's generally how these work. And the idea behind these is a contract, you learn very early, is a promise for a promise. You promise to do something, and I promise to do something. It turns out in these, you'd think that the customer just promised to pay and the cloud computing, you know, the cloud provider would promise to be a cloud provider. But it usually works the other way, where you're promising as a cloud consumer a lot more than the cloud provider. Now, the idea behind these, generally speaking, agreements between companies, is to first figure out what everybody's supposed to do. What am I supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? And second, to figure out what happens if something goes wrong. Try and think of all the possible things that can go wrong and decide now, before there's an emergency, how we'll deal with them. And that needs to engender trust. That's how good agreements work. So let's look at the Google Docs agreement quickly. 4.2, you acknowledge and agree that the form and the nature of the services Google provides may change from time to time without prior notice to you. That sounds like they could just cut it off, shockingly. 4.3, you acknowledge that Google may stop providing the services to you with or without prior notice. What happens to all my information? Can I get it back? You acknowledge and agree that you may be prevented from accessing any files contained in your account, and that's it. Rackspace, another big one. 12.1, you will not have access to your data stored during suspension or following termination. You know, the Koran burner, remember that guy? Maybe a few months ago? He had his account in a data center suspended. Now, whatever you think about that, if your data is suspended, I mean, these things happen. And if your business is using, right, if your business is having stuff in the cloud, right, services, software, and it just gets terminated, how do you get it to move it over someplace else? Remember, the backups are theirs. Speaking of which, we back up Rackspace cloud systems and may destroy the backups. These backups may not be available to you. And they might get rid of all but the most recent. That's not a normal backup policy. The takeaway is the cloud provider agreements tend to protect the cloud provider, not the cloud consumer. And this is not the kind of trust that you need in order to give up the kind of control that you're going to give up. And you think of bungee jumping, what we want is trust. Right? You really do need to trust them. But what they're asking for isn't trust, it's faith, which is fine in some contexts, but not in this context, right? You can't just, sure, no problem, I'll trust the guy at the data center that everything will just be fine. We need real trust. So, how do we get it? We'll get to that at the end in our solutions. So, third, collateral dangers. These are the sorts of things, as I said, that you may not have thought of, but that can be terribly dangerous. And you won't recognize them until they knock on your door at 6 a.m. and ask to go through all your stuff. Border searches are like this more recently, but when the government shows up to take your computers and look at them, they don't give them back right away. And they may be gone for months. I had a client who couldn't get his laptop back for 6 months. Couldn't get his BlackBerry back for 6 months. And when you ask them when it'll come back, they say, oh yeah, we'll get it back to you. Oscar Wilde once said that to expect the unexpected shows a thoroughly modern intellect. But a more recent philosopher, Donald Rumsfeld, told us that there are unknown unknowns, the ones we don't know that we don't know, and that's what I'm trying to point out today. So one of them is the third-party subpoena. We talked about what a subpoena is when two parties are fighting. But sometimes two parties are fighting and there's data someplace else. A third party has the information and one of the two parties wants it. So how do they get it? Well, they issue a third-party subpoena. And that commands the third party to produce the information. Now, there are ways to fight it if you're a third party and don't want the expense, but it's expensive just to fight it, right? Not only to produce it. So this is your cloud provider, and this is your data over here, over here. Is the data properly segregated? So there are two problems with this. First, your data is over here at your cloud provider, right? And you're in this fight, right, in this lawsuit, and someplace else, somebody asks this third party for data, and you know they're asking for it. Now, that's bad. But what's worse is imagine that you are not involved at all. You use a particular cloud provider, and somebody else is having a fight, two parties are having a fight, and they ask the cloud provider for the information, and your information was over here, and it was over there, and you know, so was theirs, right? Theirs was real close to yours, and they hand it over. If the data isn't properly segregated, they may be handing over your data, right? And that's not just a leak, right? Having your data shipped off without your knowledge en masse is a disaster. Not just because the data is out there, if you have trade secrets, personal information, it's not just the fact that it's out there. It's out there and you never knew. Nobody's going to tell you, right? Who do you think is going to be the first call when this happens? Are they going to, is the cloud provider going to inform everybody that the data may be out there? And how about the old backups? Right, they may have to turn over backup tapes. Were they going to slice up the tape, right? They might just turn over the tape itself, where your data is. And it turns out the protective orders are not that great, and they get lifted. So you don't know your data is out there, and it's been turned over to a third party, and maybe they're a competitor, right? Maybe the lawsuit is unrelated to you, but score, got your data. The point is there's no notice requirement for these sorts of things, and so you may never know until one day there's a problem. If your cloud provider gives up your sensitive data and you don't know, it's that. It's a total disaster. And you may be recovering it from years if you last that long. How are we doing time? Good. So here's another issue. So you give up your data to a third party, and they think, we have all this data. What if we let third parties look at it? Investigators, right? These companies that do background checks. Maybe they could look at it. Private investigators, that's if you're not old enough to know. Now, Google wants to index your data, right? All of it. I had this thought, sort of imagined that there were some guys at Google sitting around saying, you know, this indexing stuff on the web is pretty good, but there's a lot of data that's sitting in on people's desktops. Wouldn't it be great if we could index that? And someone else said, well, let's get them to send it to us. What? And that's what they're doing, right? You're just sending them all your data. And that's the trade-off, right? You're paying, sometimes you get things for free, and sometimes you get things in the cloud for cheaper. And we all think, oh, well, the reason cloud is so much cheaper is because it's aggregated all together, and this is their core competency, right? And there are economies of scale. But some of it is you may be paying with a currency that is your data. Right? Now you're giving them access to it. I mentioned this at a conference at IBM I spoke at, and I was on a panel with a guy from Google. And afterwards, we were talking, and I told him about this idea I had. And he said, oh, yeah, that's exactly what happened. He wasn't kidding. So the point is you wouldn't know. And the reason you wouldn't know is control and transparency. Search warrants. Like I said, they show up early and they take everything. Often they'll copy, sometimes they won't. The Fourth Amendment search warrant is the kind of search warrant we think of. You know, the Constitution requires a certain standard for when the government can get a search warrant. It's called probable cause, and it's a relatively high bar. The thing is that that's not the only way for the government to get information. Another way is something called the Stored Communications Act. It's part of a larger law that we'll talk about in a bit, but the SCA has what's called a 2703D order, and it has a much lower standard. In fact, the standard is specific and articulable facts that the data is relevant and material. And the word articulable comes from another context where, if you think about how often the police frisk people, it's articulable facts. They just have to be able to describe the way that this stuff is important. Now, the Stored Communications Act requires prior notice, which sounds good, except that notice can be postponed for 3 months. That's a long time. Having the government come in and take your data is one thing, but not knowing about it, right? At least sneak and peek things I do for drug dealers and other people. Having your company data out there, who knows what terrible things your company's done? If you work at a large company, this will make sense. But sometimes companies don't just act, right? A corporation doesn't act on its own. It acts through its employees. And sometimes employees do things that the company doesn't want them to do. In the case of briberies we talked about, companies will bribe officials, government officials, you name it, and it's the responsibility of the company. Now, when that happens and the company catches it, typically there's an investigation, they hire an outside lawyer. I've done this many times. You go in and you investigate as if you were a prosecutor. You talk to the employees, you search the documents, but it's all protected. And if you figure out who did it, you fire the people who are in charge, you change the system so you make sure it will never happen again. Then the question is, should we tell the cops? Now that sounds silly, except that corporations all the time contact prosecutors and say, we bribe people, please don't hurt us, right? Please give us a lower fine. And the reason for that, well, one reason for that, there are a number of reasons that go into the decision about when to self-report, is that you hope that, they're gonna find out anyway, let's get the favor of telling them first. Maybe an employee is gonna tell them. But in this case, you don't have that option because they may be looking for something else. Maybe you're a company that has a bunch of data that they think you sold to someone else, and they go looking, and then they find some bribery along the way. And the fines for this sort of thing are huge. The biggest fines for almost anything are bribery fines. So, what's the real danger that we're talking about? And how bad can it get? Remember this thing? Cloud computing is dangerous, and the plane? This guy is a child molester, which you can tell by looking at him, right? Didn't everybody think, look, child molester, right? Okay, so his name is Richard S. Goldberg. I am Richard P. Goldberg. We are not related. Okay, we just have the same name. Now, he was captured. He was on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list. I think they caught him in Canada. But anyway, he was a child molester. Now, imagine, instead of just preying on children in that way, he was interested in child pornography. Not a stretch, right? And imagine that he used your cloud service provider. The FBI could just back up a truck and shut down the whole place. And child porn, unlike a lot of things where the FBI really just needs copies, child porn is contraband. If they know about it, they can't leave it sitting around. They have to take it and destroy it. You can't say, you guys have some child porn and we're going to prosecute you, but hold on to your child porn. So they may have to shut down the data center and take everything and look through all of it and make sure it's all gone. Is the stuff properly segregated? Well, they may say to the cloud provider, hey, do you segregate your data? And they say, oh, yeah, we segregate our data, no problem. And the FBI says, sure, sounds great. Probably not, right? They're going to investigate for themselves. And they could seize everything, all the drives, all the computers, and shut the place down. And that could be a real problem for you if that's how you run your business. And, we think about these things as being distributed, so there's data in Arizona, and there's a data center in Texas, and there's a data center in Maryland. But the FBI has a lot of agents all across the country, and they have a lot of trucks, and they'll just back up a truck to every place and shut the whole thing down. Now, this is a hypothetical. And so now lawyers are. I went to talk to a friend of mine who's a federal prosecutor who works in a U.S. attorney's office that I won't name. And I described the problem. I said, you know, there's this child pornographer who's storing things in the cloud. It's in a bunch of different data centers. Would you really go in? Even though there are tons of other customers, you know, unrelated to this guy who's running this ring, and just shut the place down and really endanger all these businesses, right? Some businesses can't be shut down for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Can you imagine shutting down a company for a month? And I will quote for you his answer because I want to get it exactly right. He went to talk to the person who's in charge of this sort of policy, and he came back to me. He said very clearly, no. Comment. I think you can imagine what that means. Now, this was a hypothetical. And I thought I was, you know, just predicting a possible future. But the Wired Threat Level blog published a description of exactly this. It wasn't child porn. It was something much less serious. It was a fraud case. And the FBI went in and just shut down the data center. There were other companies who got shut down also. Unrelated, the FBI sees 220 servers belonging to the guy who owned the data center and his customers, routers, switches, cabinets for storing servers, and even power strips. Now, you've got to give them a break because with all these servers, they probably don't have enough power strips to run them all. So I get why they took the power strips. But the point is, when the customers went to try and recover their stuff, right, all they needed to do was move to another data center. They couldn't get them back. Remember, the cloud provider takes care of the backups? Oh, don't worry about backups. Plus, you know, how are you going to back up this stuff stored in the cloud without serious transparency? And they just couldn't get the stuff back. They were shut down. Some went out of business. And they were just, all they were doing was sharing space. You know, this happened to happen in Texas. It was a smaller data center. I don't mean to connect it to the company I'm about to tell you about, but I will tell you that, you know, policies are sometimes different around the country. And you know what? Who has a data center in Texas? Taxpayers. So, a doctor once said that the trouble with heart disease is that the first symptom is often very hard to deal with because it's sudden death. And that's what we're talking about. It's the end of the company. And all you did was put your stuff in the cloud. Now, a lot of companies with internet connections will do what, right? We'll have two internet connections from completely different providers on completely different systems. And if the main one goes down, the crappy backup one will take over, right? But at least there's something to keep it running. But that's with a connection that's standardized. If you need to run your systems potentially on two different cloud systems and, you know, there's no transparency, moving from one to the other is one thing, but running them simultaneously is basically impossible. So, let's talk about potential solutions, if we can think of any. The first thing is that we need to enhance transparency. This is serious. We need to know who's behind the curtain. I just think this is a great cartoon, because I'm a dog person. You know, we need to know who's running the system, and how it's running, and where these things are. You remember that you know, LA went to Google, switched from Microsoft to Google to handle its email and other document things. And when this happened, there were delays, and there were security delays. Just the police and some other agencies said, whoa, the security problems aren't taken care of yet. But cloud computing will evolve. It is evolving. It's getting better every day. And some of these problems will be solved. So the second thing is to increase control. Right? You need more control over your data. One way is to change these agreements so that you can really engender trust, that you're in a more equal setting. There's a case that was argued in the Supreme Court about 2 days ago about these what we call contracts of adhesion, where the company says, here's the contract, you may sign it or not. And this was a cell phone company, and they were preventing their customers from taking up class actions. But this is the problem, that these companies just say, here it is. And, you know, Google was in the news a couple of days ago saying, we don't want you to, consumers should understand that they can't really negotiate these things. They are how they are, and we can't change it just based on what you want. Now, there are a couple problems with this. First is, you know, think about your data retention policies, right? They may be different based on the type of business you run. If you're a lobbyist, you may want different data retention policies. No data at all. Or if you're a company that has a big history and you really need to keep these things around, you may need to keep logs forever. Cloud providers don't really have that kind of control. What's a little bit worse is, you know, people go to Google. I was helping a Fortune 500 company that wanted to move to Google for its docs and email. And they said, hey, can you give us information about your security? And Google said, no. Here's a document, and it basically contained nothing. And they said, look, the tech people said, we need more information. And they're telling their bosses, look, we can't just do this blindly. We need to know what they're doing. And Google said, okay, no. And so I talked to a person from Google, and I said, you know, they were having this problem. And he said, yes, that's our standard answer. If you are small and you come to us, you don't have enough users, we give you this much information. If you have more users over another level, we give you more information. But it's a set amount of information. Only the biggest customers get to actually talk to our people. He said something else that was interesting. He said, when a company comes to us, like that company, and says, we have security concerns, and we can't go with you until we have these things fixed. And Google says, well, we're not telling you. You know, security by obscurity is not totally crazy. It's at least a piece of a lot of people's security policies. And so the guy from Google said, look, you know, this is what we do. And this is what happens. Sometimes they just come. They say, okay, fine. You know, we said we needed it, otherwise we couldn't come, but we're really going to contract with you. Another thing that happens is they leave. Then 6 months later, they come back with a different CIO, or maybe 12 months. That guy's been given the axe. You have a new guy. He says, oh, yeah, it's no problem. We'll come. And that's just how they operate their business, because they do everything on low-cost transactions. So what we're talking about is control and transparency. So how do you get this? Well, like I said, we're trying to build trust. And one way you do that is with these agreements where we, you know, service level agreements where we set up exactly who's going to do what and who's responsible for what. And providers really need to take more responsibility before we can trust them with this kind of information and give up this kind of control. One important thing is advance notice of data release. If a subpoena comes in, you need to be told by the provider so you have an opportunity to try and stop it, try and quash the subpoena, try and limit it, and intervene. Otherwise, we're in the problem we talked about earlier, which is that you don't know, not just don't you know what happened, but you don't know anything happened at all, right? Total surprise. You need to start thinking about encryption, the kind of encryption you wouldn't need in your server room because you control the access, right? You control physical access. If there's a break-in, you'll know about it as soon as anybody. When I carry my data around for clients, I carry it very often. Like when I travel now, I have a netbook that has no data on it at all and a USB drive that's encrypted. If I lose my keys, which I've never done in my entire life, but if I in fact do lose my keys, good luck, the whole thing's encrypted. That's if I make a mistake and something bad happens and I give the data, somehow a third party gets the data. If I'm handing a third party my data, at the very least, it should be protected from prying eyes. And you know, this happened in a State Department with passport information. Right during the election, they were looking at Hillary Clinton's passport and some other people's passports. There was a very sophisticated security system in which the employee would go in and there'd be a window that says, do you have access to this information? And the employee would click yes, and then they'd get the information. You need more than that, right? You have to start thinking about how you can build encryption into your systems so it's encrypted with the third party, and they can't just go looking at it. Now, can they inspect memory and that sort of thing? Fine. But you need to take some precautions because somebody, you know, may get loaded onto a laptop, right? They may do some sort of sneaker net transfer, and then somebody walks home with it, you know, leaves it in his trunk. You need prompt notice of a breach. None of this Utah stuff where we'll tell you down the line if we think it's important. You need to know right away, because now you have to start doing things. There are these data breach requirements where you have to start notifying people. How do you deal with a breach? The first thing you do is you go find a lawyer and say, what do I have to do, right? What are the rules? Well, you don't know them. While they're investigating the breach, you need to contact somebody who can tell you what to do. So when they tell you exactly what they know, assuming they do, you'll be ready to do what you need to do. And for that, you need notice right away. It's okay if they say, hey, this is what we know now, it's not that much, and we'll keep you updated. But you need that sort of transparency. Clear data retention policies that are observed and not observed in the breach, right, that are really followed, and a way for providers to have different policies based on different customers. That's just a software problem. You need some sort of audit rights. We'll talk about a different kind of audit soon, but there has to be a way that somebody audits these things in a real way. Now you might think, look, they're never going to agree to that. I told you about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, this foreign bribery statute in the US. In certain parts of the world, for the FCPA, one of the ways you prevent liability is you have audit rights and you audit your agents who are there. So if you do oil work in Nigeria, which some of my clients have done, and you have a problem, you have rights to audit your agent. Now initially, agents said, go screw yourself, right? We're not going to let you audit our files. But when every company said they needed these things, everyone said, if you don't allow us audit rights and actual audits, we're just not doing business. We'll walk away. Now they're standard. If you do oil business in Nigeria with an agent, all of them have audit. You always have audit rights. It just changed the industry. You need the right to access your data. If your service is terminated for whatever reason, if there's a dispute, whatever it is, you need to take your data and get it someplace else. If there's a crash, you know, the company might go under, you need to be able to get to your data. Whatever happens, you need to be able to have a recovery system that is, you know, better than, oh, I hope everything gets better. Disaster recovery, you cannot outsource disaster recovery fully. You can outsource the authority, but not the responsibility. You need to figure out what to do in case something goes wrong. And even with all these things, there are still things that we just can't solve yet. And you need a plan in advance. Now, this is mostly a room of techies. I know there are some people who are a little bit higher level. What if there's a failure to notify, right? They're required to notify you. It's one of the contractual rules, and yet they don't. Right? You can't cry about it now. You need a plan in case you find out about it later, right? A month down the road. What if they just don't adhere to their policies? What is your disaster recovery plan for finding out that all this data is sitting around that you thought was gone, or all this data you thought was, you know, was gone is now sitting around? No employee vetting. What if it's a guy who drinks wine with Cheetos? Or some other, you know, bad employee? You don't know who their employees are, and these are the guys who have access to your data. A data seizure or service failure, the whole thing falls down. Now, it may be that it's just too expensive to mitigate. There are certain failures that you just hope never happen. This is actually a real business strategy, right? There are certain things that are so bad and so expensive to worry about that you just have to hope they don't happen because you can't afford to stop them. Okay, fine, but know what they are, right? Know that you're betting your business. What if your data is held hostage? You have some sort of money dispute and they say, okay, we're gonna terminate your service. And you say, you can't terminate our service. We already paid, so no, we want more money. We've changed our terms. You say, fine, I'm out of here. Well, I have a right to my data, right? We negotiated that. Give it up. And they say, nope. That's just like a data seizure, right? That's no different than having the feds come. It's no different than the place falling down. You now no longer have access to your data, and you can't run your business, and you can't move your business. Because where are the backup tapes? They have them. Company counsel has to understand these problems, and somebody needs to explain them before an emergency. Okay? explaining these to the corporate lawyers, it's not going to be like talking to your nephew, you know, about tech where they sort of get it right away. It's going to feel a lot like this. So, another thing we can do is change the law and the landscape. Now, we talked about audits. I'll go through this relatively quickly. There's a group called Cloud Audit A6. You may have heard of it. It stands for Automated Audit Assertion Assessment and Assurance API. A6 is very clever. What they're worrying about is a standardized way to do audits so that there's this built-in transparency. And what that attacks is that really does attack the transparency problem in a real way. And it doesn't fix the control problem. But for the things that you can trade, transparency for control, this is a big deal. And the people doing this are very smart. This is relatively new, digital due process. I told you about the SCA, the Stored Communications Act. That's a smaller part of the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. You might have heard about the ECPA. That's what they're talking about. That's what allows these the government to come in with an order and just pick up your stuff. And that attacks the control problem, but only for law enforcement. It really is only Fourth Amendment-based reform. There's another group that's starting up right now. It's really in its infancy. It's called Coalition for Platform Parity, and the idea is to make it's platform parity. Your data on your computer at home is like data in your office, is like data in the cloud, is like data on a USB drive when you're walking through the border security, right? The TSA has been known recently, especially, to just take stuff and walk away with it and say, maybe you'll get it back at some point. You say, well, can I have a copy? And they say, no. We take it. Like it's all child porn, right? Like it's all contraband, but it's the border. And this attacks the control problem. Now, I just want to tell everybody, form requires support. Join these things if you know about them. Contribute your time and your expertise if you can. Contact me and I can put you in contact with a lot of these people. So a quick summary. Remember that you can delegate authority, but you can never delegate responsibility from the guy who created the failure of the Edsel. Remember that guy and that guy. Remember that guy could be using your cloud service provider. Remember they can just take everything. Remember control and transparency and that third-party possession and multi-tenancy are really what we're worried about, the basis of cloud. Remember the cloud provider agreements tend to protect the provider, and that what we really need is a way to engender trust. And we can do that, among other things, by changing the law. Remember that cloud computing is dangerous, and remember the plane. Thank you. So we'll open up to questions. We need the mics.
Could you comment briefly on federal letters?
I'm sorry?
The federal letters.
Like security letters?
Security
letters. National security letters?
Yeah.
Worse. That was really a problem that we started seeing 5-6 years ago during the last administration. And it's just as bad. The government shows up, they say to the provider, please give us the information. And worse than a regular sort of order or a subpoena, there's this overhanging patriotism argument where they say, well, if you really love your country, you'll give us this information, right? And they did. And so people didn't know that their data was given up. They may still not know, right? It's all a big secret. And whatever you think about the ethics of that, the business problem is huge because the post 9/11 changes that allowed agencies to share information were changes to laws that started during the Nixon era, right? These terrible abuses. And the idea was if one branch doesn't have these sorts of limitations and they find that information, you can't use that as a way to get the information over to the other side, right? The CIA does its thing and then with almost no restriction and then sends the data over the FBI and then there are prosecutions. Once the government has the information, unless they want to protect how they got it, they can use it for almost anything. And that's how prosecutions move. They start with just a little bit, and they say, oh, look what we found. And they go off in a completely different direction. And it can take down the company. Yes?
Hi, Richard Schultz, Telme Networks. I wanted to ask about these agreements that, like such as Google's, that pop up on your screen and you can say yes or no. One other thing that you could do is change the actual text that your browser displays to you, and then, you know, to be more palatable to you, and then click yes on that. Have you actually agreed to anything different if you do that?
That's an interesting way to deal with it. If you surreptitiously change a contract, then I don't know what will happen. That's an interesting problem. If your goal was to make sure the other side didn't know, I don't know.
Well, the goal is just to make an agreement more in,
well, but,
more
right, but
even,
did you email to me, to them? To, not to me, but to them. Did you say, oh, yeah, I changed your agreement. I hope you don't mind. Or did you just keep it secret? Right, you could change the text locally, right?
Right.
Or you keep it there. Do you send it to Google and say, hey, by the way, change your contract. Hope that's okay with you. Or do you just keep it locally?
Well, you just click yes. I mean, there's no way to send it to
no,
you.
No, but we all have, you have email? I'm just kidding. We all have email. I'm sorry. My point is that when you change the text, right, I'm just sort of doing what you're not supposed to do, thinking off the cuff and speaking into a microphone, are you then telling the other side that you've changed it?
You could send
no.
it to someone.
But are you? But
probably not.
Right. So that's a problem. But I don't, for one thing lawyers don't say, I don't know. Probably it's a problem.
You could send it to them, and since you've clicked yes, it automatically grants you the access, assuming that you agreed to what they thought they had sent you. So
yeah.
You could probably get away.
You may have violated something by accessing the text. I don't know. Good question.
I was curious on the issue of multi-tenancy and its interaction with encryption, whether you're aware.
Can you speak a little bit closer to the mic?
Sorry. I was curious on the interaction between multi-tenancy and encryption, if you were aware of a case where a third party has been forced to divulge their keys so that a fishing expedition could extend across one of the seized assets.
There have been cases where people have been jailed for not divulging keys. The government can order you to divulge that sort of thing. If the multi-tenancy problem that we were talking about, I think, is a little different, right? It's when they get your information as part of an expedition, fishing or otherwise, when they're really looking for something else. And now the problem is they have it, right? If they're looking for your information and they know to contact you, well, they needed the right way to get your information. Now, if they want your keys, they will ask you for them, right? And then if that doesn't work, they'll threaten you. And if that doesn't work, they'll go to a judge. When a judge orders you to give up your keys, you should probably give up your keys.
Yeah,
the next thing he orders you to do is to show up and wear an orange jumpsuit.
No, my question was in the case where you weren't actually the subject of the investigation, but your encrypted data was resonant on the systems that were seized. I was curious if you were aware
right,
of
so
cases
they get the information
where the third
party's been. They say they want the keys. Well, how do they get the keys? They ask you. So now they ask you, and you say no. And the next thing they do, after they threaten you, is they go see a judge, right? That's the next step, and the judge either orders you to or not.
Not the question I was asking. I can.
Well, I'm sorry.
Take it up later.
No. Ask the.
So, there's an investigation into Party A. Party A's data is resident on systems under the direct physical control of Party B, who is in a contractual arrangement with Party C. Party C's encrypted data is on Party B's systems. Party A, as a subject.
Sorry, could you give the names or something? I got lost.
Okay. Joe's under an investigation for, say, kiddie porn. Joe's data is sitting on Bob's server. Bob also has a customer, Carol. Carol was sufficiently cautious to encrypt her data before it went on Bob's server. When Bob's servers get seized, are you aware of cases where Carol has been forced to divulge her keys to help prove that the data was not relevant to the original investigation?
I see. So I think this is basically what we're talking about. These cases, a lot of the cases we look at are new because some of the, you know, the architectures, much of it is new. Of course, multi-tenancy is not new. If Carol's data, which is the encrypted data, and she was not the subject of the investigation, is retrieved by the government, right? The government now has it. And the government says, we want your key, right? The way you become a subject of an investigation in the federal terms, there are subjects, that's the first thing, right? They're just looking at you. If you're really the one they want, you become a target. If you're not really the one they want, that you become a witness. Witness good, target bad. If you're still, you know, if somebody else is the subject, and now they have your data and they think, oh, that might be important, you'll probably become a subject pretty quickly. Now maybe you'll become a witness. But the point is they're looking at you. It's not like there's a place, a registry of subjects, right? They just say, all right, we're looking at you. And they say, we want your data. And you say, you can't have it. It's encrypted, haha. And they say, no problem. Give it to us, we're going to put you in jail. And you say, no, you won't. And so they go to a judge, and they have to make the case to a judge to order you to give up your keys. If the judge tells you to give up your keys, give up your keys. Or go to jail. Maybe it's important enough, right? Maybe the penalty for for refusing the judge's order is low enough that the stuff you're really trying to hide is high enough that it's better to go to jail for not giving up your keys. But that's the issue.
The original question was whether you're aware of a case where a third party, a Carol in this case, had been compelled to provide their keys.
I'm not aware of a case that's this specific.
Okay.
But there are cases that are very similar where people are required to give up their keys.
Okay, thanks.
A related question. In Britain, I believe, they can...
I can't...
Related question. In Britain, I believe they can jail you indefinitely until you give up your keys. Basically, you go to jail until you rot and die or you give up your keys. Is that the case in the U.S.?
Usually there's a limit. You'll come out. You know, remember there was a reporter who was asked to give up her sources. And the judge said, you're going to jail until you give them up. It is, I think, technically possible to stay until you comply with the order. But usually something intervenes. I don't think they can keep you in jail indefinitely until they charge you with something. And a life sentence is unlikely for that kind of, right, for disobeying it. So it's not really indefinite. But it could be a while.
So the
answer is no indefinite detention unless you go to Guantanamo, separate. You're a citizen, so you might be indefinitely confined.
Sorry, I would like to say the penalty isn't infinite, but it can be up to a couple of years, so you really do have to want to hang on to your keys, as far as I recall.
Is that about a British law?
For the UK.
Okay, sorry, I have no idea.
For the UK, sorry. Nikolai Plum from Booking.com. You can get jailed for a couple of years if convicted and sentenced for not giving up your crypto keys, but they can't hold on to you forever if you haven't given up the keys. They have to charge you with not giving up the keys, and then you get sentenced, and then you go to jail for a couple of years. But you don't get thrown away in clink. We don't have Gitmo in the UK.
But the point is that you got to really want to keep that stuff secret.
It's 2 years of your life.
Anything else? Applauding for that guy.
Thanks.
Doyle rules.
I appreciate the clap. Do you think the cloud model can work? Do you think the cloud model can work?
What model?
The cloud model.
Oh, cloud model, I'm sorry.
There's a lot of things that need to be cleared up, a lot of things that need to be fixed. But there was kind of a... Because you're coming at it in this talk from all the things that need to be fixed, Do you think it's fixable?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that... Well, there are two ways to think about it. One is that you can change laws, you can change these service level agreements, and you just need the will to do it, right? You need leverage, you need people who care enough to do it. And I think some of these things do need to be changed. I don't know what the likelihood is that search and seizure law will be changed. That's kind of tough. But the companies who have signed on to it have a lot of money and can really fund that kind of thing. Assuming they don't change, I think that there are certain business decisions. Everything's risk reward, nothing's perfect. And maybe you're putting stuff out in the cloud that isn't that important. If you don't put everything in the cloud, right? If it's just customer facing information, that might be a risk you're willing to take.
The SCA law that you mentioned, the law that you mentioned that has that lower bar, seems like it should be something that can be that should come up for, you know, the Fourth Amendment has this standard and this is doesn't comply with it, therefore this law is illegal kind of thing. I'm sorry, I can't remember the best terms to use for that, but is that happening? Is that just not possible?
As far
no
as
one's
know,
bothering to challenge it?
You know, I don't know if it's been challenged, but it's relatively well accepted. You know, there are, when you think of the constitutional requirements under the Fourth Amendment, they seem strict, but there are tons of exceptions. That is not by far the only exception. And it's incredibly complicated. You know, things in your car are different because they're mobile. Things in a locked trunk, in the boot of your, what you call the boot of your car, right, in a locked box in the trunk, are different than what's in the other part of the trunk. Things in your pocket when you walk around are different based on whether when you get frisked, an officer can tell what it is upon touch. Oh, that's a crack pipe. This is not the only exception. And, you know, people like to think of these things as absolute, but they're very much not absolute. And this is just one of a million exceptions. Anything else? Okay. There's a panel after this, by the way. We're going to talk about other cloud issues in about 30 minutes. Thank you very much.